Hey, you guys.
Hey.
Hey, guy. And guy.
And ladies. Everybody.
Hey, ladies.
Hey, everybody that's listening to this podcast. This is episode 77 of the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
77?
Yeah. let's just start off just like that.
Bi-weekly Big Planet Comics.
Yeah. We said it wasn't bi-weekly, and then it was bi-weekly, but it's not bi-weekly. We're going to be back.
We're just lazy.
Next week, probably.
Unless something comes up, yeah.
Well, yeah.
We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And, we're here to do the thing we do. We'll do some news tonight. We're going to do some viewer mail. We're going to do some reviews.
Yeah. All kinds of comic
and,
book stuff.
And, you can listen to this podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Check us out on Facebook. Go to our webpage. Go to Twitter at Big Planet Comics. Give us reviews on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on Tumblr. Tumblr stuff.
Go on Tumblr. Something we've posted things on there before.
Yes.
Yep.
In the past.
From time to time.
Check out our MySpace.
Check out our Friendster. Check us out on LinkedIn.
What was that Comicster one? That like Friendster for comics people.
Oh yeah,
exploded very quickly.
Comic Space.
It was something like that.
Yeah. I think it was Comic Space.
We're on there too.
Yeah. And when you say exploded, you mean imploded.
Too much effort to explode.
Yeah. So what have you guys been up to? Let's start with Jared. Jared, you've been going to a lot of concerts.
I went and saw Bomba Estéreo, which is a Colombian rock band fronted by a very charismatic woman. Who knew enough English to tell us to arriba many times.
That's not English.
But they're amazing. They're really good rocky stuff. And then I saw Hot Chip last night, which was also amazing. And I'm really tired.
Yeah.
My feet hurt.
Well, this is going to be a pretty short podcast anyway, so that's all right. What about you, Nick? What have you been doing?
Not much. Dreading the upcoming cicada assault.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Every 17 years.
Yeah.
You should hear Nick drunkenly explain that the cicadas are coming. It's pretty entertaining.
They're coming, man.
Yeah. There's something like that.
They're going to eat stuff, and there's going to be shells everywhere.
Wow.
They pop under your tires.
That's even grosser.
Gross. Yeah.
I remember them. I remember. I never forgot.
He survived the first war.
What have I been doing? I went to a wedding. Nick was there as well.
Yeah.
Our friend Shelley Ganesh. Right. Congratulations.
Yes.
And what else? Been playing a lot of WWE 13. I watched WrestleMania at a sports bar. That was pretty entertaining.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did the Undertaker lose?
The crowd on that.
They were pretty hype.
It was
pretty entertaining. Yeah, people were yelling and stuff.
Awesome.
I went with Andy, who you guys might know from the podcast, and we were both yelling, and it was good times.
Were you rooting for The Undertaker?
I was rooting for CM Punk.
Who won?
I'm not going to spoil the WrestleMania.
It's been like a week
wasn't
ago.
There one where
it's been like 4 days?
Wasn't The Rock going up?
It's
against...
been like four episodes of The Rock.
Yeah,
The Rock did wrestle John Cena.
Yeah.
I'm being outed as a wrestling fan right now.
Outed?
Yeah.
You're quite proud.
This week on Inside WWE. But no, it was fun. And that's pretty much all I've been doing.
Yeah, we should add that segment to the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Yeah. And and I've been working on our business card.
Yeah, which looks amazing.
Which looks pretty awesome. So we'll post a picture of that. We'll just post one on this podcast episode.
Sure.
No.
No?
Soon.
No, soon.
We're going to wait till you can actually get them.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to see this and want to get the like a million put in their wallets.
Yeah. Also... This week and inside the business cards. So I think that's about it for what's we've been doing.
Yeah.
What's been doing.
So you guys want to do some news?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it.
All right. Comixology banned Saga this week. It's kind of a weird thing because
it's a saga of Saga.
Yeah, I can kind of explain the whole thing.
All right,
give it a shot.
So basically, Saga number 12 came out this week.
Yesterday.
Yesterday, and it didn't show up on any of the app store stuff where people get comics. Right. Basically, Comixology on iPhones.
Yeah,
but it was on Android and things like that.
Yeah.
And so everybody was like, Apple is banning Saga number 12 because on the first couple of pages, there's kind of an explicit. Gay sex scene.
Yeah.
But only like it's like little. It's on what's a Prince 4? Is that his name? Prince 6?
Okay.
Anyway, it's on his TV screen. And it is very explicit.
Yes.
So everybody was getting really mad at Apple saying they were homophobic because previously in Saga stuff there have been other sex scenes.
There've been lots of violence, lots of nudity, and lots of non gay sex.
And actual, like real, dirty sex.
dirty sex.
Just a bunch of dirty birds having sex. And so people were saying that, why is this one banned? Is it just because it's homosexual sex? And they were making a big deal out of it. A little bit understandably, I guess. But Saying it's kind of, but maybe overreacting as well. But yeah, but you know, saying maybe there was a double standard.
True.
So then it came out that it wasn't Apple that it actually had pulled the trigger on that. It was Comixology who had thought that it didn't fit in with Apple's terms and conditions, like their rules regarding that stuff.
Right.
So
then apparently Apple was being like, "What up, Comixology? Yeah, you make us look like jerks.
Yeah,
it's your own fault."
Yeah. So basically, that happened, and so now that's going to be on the App Store. And Sex, the other image series that kind of has some explicit stuff in it, is also going to be on the App Store.
Right. That's the actual title.
Sex. You can buy sex on the App Store.
Talking about that comic with like people in the store is always
weirds me out a little bit. The only thing creepier is talking to people about My Little Pony. And the only thing creepiest is when they buy both.
Like when somebody walks in and you're like, "Yeah, man, sex was great." They're like, "Wait, what?"
Better
are you
than saying
trying?
I hated sex.
Yeah, this guy came in. He was like, "Do you think I'm gonna like sex?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, you're gonna love it.
I love it."
So
not keep trying.
So at the end of all this, I just want to read this. Brian K. Vaughan basically came out and summed the whole thing up, and he said, "He said I want to apologize."
Sounds like it all. Do his voice.
I want to apologize to everyone
for this entire Saga 12 kerfuffle. Yesterday, I was mistakenly led to believe that this issue was solely with Apple, but now it's clear that it was only ever Comixology too conservatively interpreting Apple's rules. I'm truly sorry. I never thought either company was being homophobic, only weirdly inconsistent about what kind of adult material was permissible. I'm grateful that the situation was cleared up so quickly, and I'm delighted I can go back to reading smutty comics on my Retina display iPad.
Nice.
So I think that's it. Yeah. I mean, in the end, I think it didn't end up being as big of a deal as it seemed. No. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of this happened before it was on sale, so they were sorting it out.
Yeah. And then in a little bit of sad news this week. Mm-hmm. So a couple comics greats passed away. George Gludier, who co-created Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh.
And Carmen Infantino, who was like the greatest Flash artist of all time.
Right. And inked a million people as well, I believe.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had a very prolific career. So just RIP those guys. It's kind of sad. But yep. All right, well, that's that. You guys,
hey.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's important though. You know, we should mention it. I mean, these guys were titans,
yep.
Indeed. All right, so you guys want to get into some viewer mail?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. All right, we've just got one question this week.
Wait, what?
Yeah, just one.
Crazy. What happened to our legions of fans?
Well, usually we go on Facebook and we're like, "Hey, you guys got any questions?" We didn't do that this week.
So we're tricking them into asking questions?
We do, yeah.
Just that they all were trying to send questions last week and we weren't here.
They were all trying to send questions at the same time and it crashed our servers.
Again?
We apologize.
Sorry.
But we shouldn't have solicited so many questions at once. So this is from Mark Miller, writer of... Right, Superior. Legacy. Yep, Kick-Ass 2. Yep, Jupiter's Legacy. He also wrote
Saturn's Legacy. Whatever it's called,
Trouble, which is a really great book.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. And
what was the one with the like Superman Adventures? What was the
He wrote Superman Adventures. It was called Superman Adventures.
That was a good one.
That was the one with Superman's Adventures. No, but this is Mark Miller, who's sent us a bunch of questions before, and we always pretend that he's the real Mark Miller, but he's the fake one. But he is the fake Mark Miller. So he says, in a recent episode, Kevin mentioned watching Pitch Perfect because it's awesome, which is 100% true. Which, all right, cheers for that. He said, it got me thinking, though. Pitch Perfect is an incredibly formulaic movie that has basically zero surprise factor, but overcomes that by being an enormous amount of fun. In that vein, what are some comics that you love that may not be the most original, but are excellent examples of their form and lots of fun nonetheless? I think that's a pretty good question.
Luckily, I've had all day to think about this.
You know, just stuff that's pretty straightforward. Here's one that I would say. It's not like a guilty pleasure, and I don't think that's really what this is. Batman Hush.
Yeah.
I think is like, you know, there's nothing spectacular about it. I know a lot of people love it a lot, but like to me, it's very, very average. But the way it's delivered is just, you know, it's just fun. It's like a bunch of villains show up, and it's kind of like all that kind of goofy stuff that you want from a comic book.
Right.
And in that sense, I don't know, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great. I cannot think of anything right now.
Me neither.
I guess I should have given you guys this question ahead of time.
Probably.
I thought you'd be like, "Oh yeah, this one."
Oh yeah.
No, nothing, you guys. Like, what about Wolverine by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller?
No way. That had ninjas in it. Didn't see that.
Exactly.
Well, you know, most...
That was like first ninjas in Wolverine
like,
ever.
Like most superhero comics.
Yeah.
They kind of feel that way. Like, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, they kind of follow a basic structure. You know, you've got like the hook at the beginning, right. And then they go and they fight and then they win.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, sometimes things break out of that. But for the most part, yeah, it's... Yeah, I thought you guys would have something.
No, that's it.
Nope.
All right, well, I mean, like, something like Popeye, for example. Like, Popeye is always, like, kind of the same thing over and over again. But it's great.
Yeah.
You know? And you get super into it. Yeah.
Which Popeye?
Like, any of it. It's all kind of the same. Well, I mean, the older stuff, I mean, it's different, but it's all kind of follows the same formula.
Oh, I got one, actually. Osagi Ojimbo, which he's been doing for 25 years or something now, and he's certainly got his craft down, and it's very rarely that I'm like, whoa, holy cow, but it's just solidly awesome every time.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, just, like, straightforward and
yep,
just
every time
good.
I'm like, this will be great, but it's not going to be terrible, but it's not going to be anything super crazy.
Yeah, you're not going to be like, what, this happened in this? I can't believe
right.
it.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, there we go. Then now we all have answers.
Woo. Right.
And our answers are Batman Hush, Popeye, and Usagi Ojimbo.
That's true.
All right. Well, hopefully that answered your question, Mark. We actually don't... That's it for our questions this week. But if you guys have questions, you can send them to our Twitter. You
yep.
can send them to our Facebook. Or you can send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or...
No, don't even... No, you're going to go? You go in there?
You can call our podcast hotline at 1-703-539 CAS. That number again, 1-703-539 CAS. Send us more questions next time because
then we,
while that was a great question, Ed Mark Miller, we love your comics, Miller World, we all live in it. we do want
it's
some more.
It's his world.
It's his world, we just live in it. All right,
world
so
we never made.
Let's do some reviews. We got quite a few this week.
Sure.
All right.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, up first this week, we've got a mini comic that somebody brought into one of our stores, actually.
Yeah, it's one of our customers at the East Street store.
Yeah,
local Arlington kid.
So what's up, Jack Dorsey? We're going to talk about your comic 2080 Rad City number one.
We are. So this guy has been coming to the store for a while, and he came in one day, and he's like, I'm working on a comic. I was like, cool, man. and then he came back in, and he's like, here's my comic. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I did it already. He's like, I had a bunch of time off, so like I kind of just finished it. And I was like, cool, yeah, we'll take it. And like once I saw the cover, I was like, all right.
Cool, two thumbs up.
This is pretty sweet.
Yeah, one thing that's unusual about this is for doing it himself, it's in color, which
yeah,
was
right.
pretty awesome off the start. And it's not just like... You know, quiet color. This is crazy Scott Pilgrim, I don't know.
Super neon colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, which definitely fits the tone of the story as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, 2080 Rad City is about a... it's like in a weird future. Well, obviously in 2080. And this kid is like on a football team. And
the Barbarians.
Yeah, called the Barbarians. And somebody... attacks him, mistaking him for an actual barbarian of some sort. And turns out he is some kind of actual barbarian.
And carries a magical sword.
And he has a magical sword. And basically the rest of the comic is just him kind of fighting these giant monsters and then dealing with high school drama. Like, he there's a girl he likes and he can't talk to her and he's kind of scared. And
more like the girl like him.
And then a kid with a flat top from the 80s shows up and he's just traveled through time to... stop whatever is happening.
To find the barbarian.
Yeah,
find
yeah.
the sword, much like the monsters are trying to do.
Yeah.
So,
and it's pretty awesome. Yeah, it's like, it's a weird thing because, like, it's not like the best written or drawn, but it's so, like...
It's full of personality, though. Like,
yeah,
and
exactly.
And it actually reads really well. Like, it flows really well.
Yeah.
The whole thing was really fun. It actually reminds me of a comic that I did with a friend of mine a few years ago. I don't know. It has a feeling. You can tell he really had fun doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
I would
exactly.
say the art style is similar to Johnny Ryan, but it's got, like, the feel of, like, Prison Pit, where just, like, you know someone's loving doing it. They, like... There's some crazy action and stuff in this.
Yeah,
too.
Some of the art reminds me of kind of like Nickelodeon shows and stuff
right,
like
right,
that.
Right.
But yeah, definitely also, like, you can tell he probably watched, like, a lot of Dragon Ball Z and
yep,
stuff
right,
like
right.
that. But I had a lot of fun reading it. And when I got to the end, I was like, oh, I want to read the next issue of this.
Yeah, it was crazy good for, like, you know, it's like the first thing he's ever done. He was just like, I wanted to make a comic for, like, ever. And he's like, I'm just going to do it.
And yeah. And he did a good job.
Yeah.
So you can get that at our stores. I don't know if you... does he have a webpage in here or anything?
Yeah, yeah. He's got something in there. email address.
Yeah, he has an email address.
There you go. Artemis Sharper. Wait, Artemis Harper. At gmail.com.
Yeah. Yeah. So email him if you want one of these. I don't know if he's actually selling them online, but I know a lot of our people that listen to this don't actually live around here, and it's a lot of fun.
Otherwise, get them from that Big Planet Comics.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right. So up next, we've got a book I've been waiting for to come out a long time, even though I already own it. This is The Adventures of Jodel. This is drawn by Guy Pielart and written by Pierre Barthier. And the reason I say it in that order is because that's the order of importance.
Correct. I don't know. The story in this is amazing.
So, this book came out in the late 60s, early 70s. I know my copy I had was from like 1972. Oof. But so basically, this
definitely
is
the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the early 70s.
66.
Oh, 66. There you go. But yeah. So. We'll talk about the art a good bit in a minute here, but the basic story of Jodel is there are these people called femme spies, and Jodel is one of them. She works for the leader of what is basically like New Rome.
Yeah, ancient Rome.
The emperor.
Or is it?
It's ancient Rome.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ancient Rome, but they have cars and TVs and music and the Beatles are
and
in
robots,
it.
Robots, yeah.
But, and so she works for Augustus, and there is a woman who wants to basically overthrow him because she feels like it's time for, like, a new status quo.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story. And so Jodel is going undercover to find evidence of her treachery, her infamy,
right.
is what they say in the book. And so she goes undercover and kind of becomes... it's all very like 60s sexy like Barbarella type stuff.
Yeah.
So she goes undercover. She has like sex with all these guards, and then they shoot them up with machine guns. Her and her friend,
right?
And then
sometimes they're like sleeping knockout guns. And
there's some brutal murders in this.
There are definitely. So and then she loses her memory and becomes like a sex slave and
named amnesia.
Yeah, and then it all kind of comes back around and. The results, you know, there's like a big climax fight, gun shootout thing at the end.
And there's, let's see what else we got in here. We got vampires.
There's an island of burly black men.
We've got melty water. We've got various cronish women who might have superpowers.
Yeah, there's robots.
Augustus the Emperor is very much a hipster.
People get pepper poured into their eyes.
Yep.
That's true. And are put on like giant, like garlic presses.
yep.
Crushed together.
Yeah. So
Kevin's plot made that sound very logical.
Surreal. So it's all that, but with this other stuff, and also it's all very sexually charged, you know.
Yeah.
And basically in every panel somebody's like bent over or has
naked. Nipples like pop out of shirts like every other panel.
Yeah. So the art in this to me is the big draw. I mean the story is great and it definitely feels of that era, like that kind of Barbarella
he actually said that this was kind of in response to Barbarella, which you guys haven't seen the movie, see it, and it is in fact based on a comic book.
The comic's great too. If you can read it,
he
read it.
Said he read the comic book and liked the concepts and like feel of it a lot, but thought the art was too old fashioned. So this is like his response of like trying to do a very modern pop style
in the mid 60s. I would say the art in Barbarella is very old fashioned. But it's great as well. But So the art in this is very influenced by pop art and Andy Warhol. I mean that's very obvious, especially in the color palette.
And they pushed it to the extremes. It's all like pastels and like very. I don't know, how would you, like, the separation between each segment is, there's no shading, it's just, like, every...
Yeah, it's just all flats.
It's flats.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's all, like, neon flats. It seems very, I don't know how, if Yellow Submarine was out at this point, but I feel like it must have been.
Yeah, yeah.
But, if not, they stole a lot from this.
It's
a lot like Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, and, I mean, basically, if you're thinking of it, think Yellow Submarine mixed with, like, Modesty Blaze or something like that.
We'll put a picture, as always, up at bigplanetcomics.com, but just trust us that it's awesome.
Yeah, and so all that influence is really interesting. This guy, Guy de Pilar, he just died, actually, last year, which unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But he went on to do a lot of album covers and things. He did the cover for Diamond Dogs, which is a very famous David Bowie album. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know.
So the first half of this book, which is what I had in this older edition... is great. It's just the graphic
the
novel,
comics,
but
yeah.
but the second half kind of does a few things. It's kind of a history of his other art that he did, and then it also talks a lot about the pop art that influenced this book, and influenced his other like projects and things that he did. And that's like 80 pages of stuff in the back. That's really great. Lots of full color, like huge posters
and pictures,
album and covers and photos and stuff. Yeah.
Which is interesting because for him, especially, this was not like he was finally getting to do the comics he always wanted to do. For him, it was just a step on his art career, and he very quickly moved into other stuff.
Well, sure, and like if you look at when it came out, 66, that's when comics as pop art were like a huge thing. You know, it's when Marvel was putting pop art on like basically on the cover of all their comics, all that stuff was huge on college campuses. So this was probably also kind of a reaction to that as well. And yeah, I mean, this is a great book. The book itself is crazy, and the art's beautiful.
And it's huge. It's nice.
But it's just, it's so well put together, too. It's it's really, like, it's maybe my favorite thing. Actually, somebody asked me today between two different things that we're talking about this week, which one was my favorite. I don't know. Maybe the other one was my favorite. But, there are two really good things this week. But I would definitely recommend checking out Adventures of Jodell, especially if you're interested in any of the kind of stuff that we've been talking about. Yeah.
Might just want to give it our highest.
Our highest recommendation, for sure. All right. Up next, we got The Last of Us, American Dreams. This is written by Neil Druckmann, who I assume is one of the writers for the video game.
Possibly.
Yeah, so this is based on a new PS3 video game by Naughty Dog, the guys that did Uncharted and the Jack and Daxter games, which are all pretty awesome. And this is drawn by Faith Aaron Hicks, who's a favorite on the podcast.
Yes, and co-written by her.
Yeah.
And so she clearly is like, let me show you how to do these comics.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun.
So I know nothing about this game, but basically there is a... bit of a hellion of a girl who is being sent to a new school after having been kicked out of and fighting. You know, just she's like the typical bad girl.
So basically the first thing, though, is that they say at the beginning, it's been 19 years since like this parasite fungal outbreak infected the world and wiped out almost all the world's population.
Well, sure, if you read that part. I'm just going by the comics.
sure. But I feel like...
That's
important,
yes.
I feel like it's weird that that is not actually on one of the pages of comics, because that's an important thing. But I think also they assume that if you're buying this, you're probably playing already know about the video game.
But you get a little sense of that. Like,
yeah, they hint to it later, because this is a very tough school. It's kind of like run like a reformatory, and very quickly she runs up against the headmaster, who's like, I don't want to put up this crazy girl. And later on starts yelling at her about, like, you know, we are the ones on the front line defending, you know, the wall and keeping those things out. And there's a scene where she's being punished by hosing blood and guts off of, like, a Humvee or something from, like, a patrol that went out and got massacred. So with that as the backdrop, she quickly runs into, like, the other tough kids at the school, but sort of becomes frenemies with this other girl who is kind of like her mirror image, that she's off and off doing stuff in a kind of rebellious fashion. And they butt heads a lot, but quickly sets it up that the two of them are probably going to get off into trouble and perhaps cross the wall.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems to be what they're setting up, and is that they're going to be out in all of this and dealing with these kind of monsters and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm interested in the game already, and I felt like it was a good prequel to that. And
it's really good for... like
a video game comic at all. Like,
it's great.
The last really good video game comic I think I read was that first Halo thing that was by Bendis and Maliv. But and like this is just kind of like, here's an aspect of that universe that, that might be interesting. And I think that's why it works.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
It's not like the Gears of War comic where they're like running around and he's like, look, I found an ammo pack.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which that comic is terrible. Don't ever read that. But Last of Us, America's Dreams. Pretty good comic.
Awesome.
Yep. All right. Up next, we've got Swamp Thing number 19.
Yeah.
You might be wondering.
Why are we reviewing this one?
Yeah. So this is a new writer, which... normally you would think, oh, Scott Snyder left a book, that's like a good time to jump off. But actually, this is I thought was a really good issue. This is Charles Soule, who, a friend of the show? I don't know. Friend of...
I drank whiskey with him before.
passes
the friend test.
I tabled with him at SPX a few years ago. He did a comic called Strongman, which is really fantastic, and another one called 27. And and now he's going to be writing a few books at DC, and this is the first one. And if this is any indication, I think he's going to be doing pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, hanging out with him and then, like, seeing his name on, like, the cover of a DC comic. He made it. I haven't seen him in a while. He made it. Scott Snyder had been writing this before, and it got kind of, like, bogged down by all the kind of rot
the crossover
stuff.
Which ended up being, like, an 18-issue or 36-issue crossover.
Right. And this book kind of... is the first book that's all after all that stuff's over, and it has freedom to kind of be a Swamp Thing comic instead of being about like the different
the big event
aspects of it. And it's cool. It's really good. It touches on a lot of the stuff that happened before, and actually the art, even though it's a different artist, keeps a lot of the style of it,
like the page layouts.
Yeah, the page layouts are very similar,
very organic.
But I feel like the Kano's art in this actually reads better than Paquette's art does.
Yeah,
it's a little less busy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's also a lot tighter, I'd say.
Yeah.
He doesn't use as many heavy blacks, which I think makes a big difference when you're drawing so much stuff on the page.
Yeah, and this issue also, I don't know if it's editorial mandate or whatever, but it's Swamp Thing kind of becoming more part of the DC universe.
Right.
So in this one, he's fighting Scarecrow, which there's a kind of a cool reason for him to be
fighting. Yeah, which works
out
really well. Basically, like, he goes into Gotham. He's kind of in his new state after, I don't want to spoil the stuff that happens in, like, Swamp Thing 18. But
he's
like,
in Metropolis.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, he's in Metropolis. And he's kind of like, he's like a new version of Swamp Thing.
Right.
And, so he goes to the Botanical Gardens in Metropolis and finds Scarecrow, who's basically looking for this this rare flower that produces this fear toxin, which I think is very cool,
yeah,
like classic comics kind of thing.
Right.
And then he ends up fighting Scarecrow and, you know, being very Poison Ivy-ish about the whole thing.
Right.
But I think it works really well. And,
yeah, it was great.
And then I don't know if it's like kind of dumb that there's like a big twist at the end of this because it's part of what was supposed to be the WTF month but
well, I want to say first of all that all these covers for the DC comics this month, they were originally the WTF that are foldouts, they ruin a lot of the twists in the issues.
Yeah, basically every one of these foldout covers
For the issue,
it's like the spoiler for the last page of the issue.
Yeah, because this one is like, yeah, the cover's like, and then Swamp Thing meets Superman, and then this one at the end it's like, oh, what? Superman's here?
Yeah. So I, WTF month should have, was it? Yeah.
It really bothered me for Green Arrow. Because Green Arrow, the cover was like, Green Arrow's greatest villain killed his father. And there's this like part in the comic that's like a great build up to it.
Yeah.
And he's like holding him up and he's like, I killed your father. And you're like, what? And I'm like, I already knew that because I read the cover. And like, damn it, DC.
Yeah, yeah, but besides that, I thought this was a very good issue.
And I gave up on the Rot storyline because it was getting so complicated. And so jumping back on this, I thought it worked really well.
Yeah,
kind of stuck
it's
with
really
it the whole
easy.
Time, and it had its ups and downs, but this is definitely a great new start.
Yeah, definitely a good jumping on point for people. And, hey, a positive. I know people kind of fault us because we always are giving DC books negative reviews, but but this one gets a positive from us. So,
yes.
Yeah, cool. Up next, we've got Thanos Rising number one. This is written by Jason Aaron, who writes Wolverine and the X-Men and Scalped and The Other Side and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
And drawn by Simone Bianchi, who probably most people know from his Wolverine stuff that he did, the Sabretooth storyline.
Right. He did, Ghost Boxes for Astonishing X-Men with Warren Ellis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He did some other stuff. Well. So this kind of follows Thanos, basically his entire life. It starts with him being born.
This is basically the origin of Thanos.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weird thing about this comic is that, in the beginning it's modern Thanos and it's like he's the destroyer of everything, and it's like, and then it's like, but let's go back in time, and it's like, here's Thanos being born, and it's like an ominous, like awesome, like it's an awesome setup. It's like he's born, his mom's like, kill him,
kill the baby,
and you're like, oh wow, this is crazy, and then the rest of the issue is Thanos as like a 10-year-old dealing with some bullies.
That is true.
And like,
he does stand out a bit.
I liked him most of all, but I felt like Thanos was a little too goody.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, I don't want to hurt any living creatures. And you're like, oh, come on.
Well, he's like Jake Lloyd, right? He's like young Anakin Skywalker. He's like, are you an angel? And then, later he's like, I'm going to kill all the younglings.
Which is kind of what happens in this
movie. So that's kind of the problem with this. It's like, at its core, like a prequel where you kind of know where it's going to end up, it's not like the worst thing.
It's also one of those kind of things where you don't need to know this.
Yeah, but I feel like you don't need to know this. It's
just like episode one.
Yeah, just like episode one, two, and three. So it does feel a little inconsequential. I mean, at the same time, I felt like it was kind of well written.
It was definitely well written.
I thought his characterization, if you remove the Thanos aspect from it of, like, you know, knowing what he's like when he's an adult. Is like, you know, he's like a well-written kid, and, you know, his group of friends is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And the kind of situation, the thing in the cave with the lizards.
So messed up.
It's really messed up. And, but it also mirrors a lot of the stuff that happened in, like, episode 2 and episode 1. So it's kind of weird in that way. Or it kind of reminds me a little bit, too, of, I don't know if you guys saw the terrible Rob Zombie Halloween movie.
Nope.
But basically the first half of that movie is is like, here's Michael Myers when he was a little kid and how people bullied him and stuff. Right, and like, and it's like, nobody wants to see that.
It's like, we don't need justification for his evil.
Yeah, like Darth Vader, like Michael Myers, Michael Myers, not Mike Myers.
Not Austin Powers.
I feel like Thanos is kind of this force of nature that's really interesting because he's just evil, you know? And so to see this doesn't really add to that, I feel like.
Yeah. But otherwise,
it's not like I'm going to feel sorry for him now or something.
It's weird though. Like, I trust Jason Aaron. I think it'll get like a lot more different as it goes along.
I'm hoping
it's not like Kid Thanos the whole time.
Yeah.
No, I think it'll follow him through his career. It'll be him like moving. It'll be like other things that happen in episode 3.
right.
But like I said, the delivery is great. It's just not something that I wanted delivered.
Yeah, I think it was just. I think it was just too treacly. When you did like the intro part about him being born and all stuff, that stuff was cool. It's just like him as a character, I didn't like.
Yeah,
I was just like, eh.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think all the surrounding stuff was very intriguing. And it's the like, supporting characters were okay, but it's like
when you want a pizza and they bring you a pizza without pepperonis on it, it's still pretty good. But I wish I had some pepperonis.
Well, no, it's like they lit a bunch of candles and then they lay the pizza out and it's got anchovies on it.
And you're like,
and you're like, this is the best anchovy pizza I've ever had. Now I'm gonna go throw up. All right, so but it's not a bad comic. We've read a lot of bad comics, and this is not one of them.
That's true.
All right, so up next we've got Uber Number Zero. This is written by Kieran Gillen, who writes Uncanny X-Men. He wrote Phonogram.
Yep.
He's writing Young Avengers right now.
Yes, sir.
He's a good writer.
Yep.
And this is art by
Avatar.
Canon White. Yeah, yeah.
32.
An artist I don't know, but it definitely has that Avatar House style where everything is brown and then sometimes it's covered with splattered blood.
Is it not Jason Burroughs?
It's not Juan Jose Reap. It's not any of those guys. But it's kind of like, this is kind of the flip side of the Captain America story, I would say.
Yeah, so another thing is this is like 40, 50 pages long.
It's a long comic.
Really long.
Yeah.
In the back, there's a nice little text piece where he's like, hey, thanks for reading. And
I thought that was really interesting that
here's my
text
research
piece in the back.
Because, he has done a lot of research into this. But it starts basically with the beginning of the fall of Berlin in World War II when the Russian armies are closing in on the remains of the Germans and stuff's getting, the Germans are getting their comeuppance. But the twist on this, that's the very well-researched part. Everything I know about it seems like he got it pretty well. There is a Nazi program to build superheroes or super-powered villains, I suppose.
Yeah, like super soldiers.
Yep. So it's flashing between the destruction of Berlin and Russians closing in and then them developing superpowers.
They like succeed in creating an Ubermensch, right?
Is that what
the word is?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Ubermensch is basically Superman.
Superman.
And actually the name of the story that Siegel and Schuster wrote before the Superman story was called The Ubermensch.
Yeah.
Which was about an evil version of Superman.
Yeah, so basically they have a program called Strike Force Siegfried, which will have a few scenes of this, of extreme carnage as these German super soldiers are just ripping people apart.
Yeah, it's weird. There's like a bunch of German super soldiers that have different distinct powers, but then there's also kind of like soldiers that are super generally just powered, like stronger and faster and stuff.
Who are kind of like their like backup to the heroes or something.
Yeah, they're like Cobra.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about this is and he talks about it in the back, is like he's not trying to make like a superhero comic. He's just trying to make a story about powered people and what it would do to them and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's
because there's no hero in this. Everybody in this is pretty much evil.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird. I don't know.
It's weird to connect. It's hard to connect to it, but it's also kind of fascinating, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting attempt.
It's literally an apocalyptic scenario. Just like everything's dying and getting killed and raped, and it's awful. It's the destruction of civilization for this area.
So. Yeah, so it is very much an Avatar book. Like, yeah. There are flying eyeballs and people getting disemboweled all over the place.
Yeah,
definitely has that Avatar house style, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah,
but I thought the writing in it was really good. It's just it, even though it's not a story I've exactly seen before, it does feel like it's treading familiar ground to
me. A little bit, yeah.
Like, just it wasn't something I was getting excited about reading.
Yeah, there was never a point where I was like, "Oh, yes." I was just kind of like, "Wow, that's crazy! That's crazy!"
Because they're trying to build up a few things. There's like, you know, the young Russian girl who's like one of the best snipers, and then there's like the scientists who are working on the program. So there are a few, and of course the superpower people. There are a few named people, but they're all kind of blurring together.
I'm also wondering if issue number one will be like really different,
like have a totally different tone to it.
Maybe like 5 years later, or you know, who knows,
or whatever. Yeah, because this is. Yeah, it's. I mean, there's got to be some reason it's a number zero.
No,
yeah.
Not necessarily. Could be silly marketing, but yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting. It's not something that really grabbed my attention, though, to be honest.
Yeah. If you're a World War II nerd like me, this was pretty awesome. Yeah.
It's definitely really, really well researched.
Yeah. Apparently, in the back, he talks about it, and then Garth Ennis was like, "Ah, you're that guy who's super into researching all this stuff." So you impressed Garth Ennis about military stuff. You're doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's Uber number zero. What's that sound, you guys?
What is it?
That means it's time for our coupon.
Woo, coupon.
Yeah, it's time for our coupon. So if you go to bigplanetcomics.com/Jodelle.
How do you spell that?
Jodelle.
Yep.
You can print out a coupon and get 25% off the Adventures of Jodelle hardcover for the next week.
Because it's the best.
And you should buy it.
That was my best sound effect for that. Oh, no, that was my best sound effect.
And all of our long-distance fans move to D.C., and we'll give you that
game. And you'll get this special deal, too. All right, so up next we've got something a little unusual for us, because we can't really sell this book and make money or anything. This is Private Eye Number 1 by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin.
Yep. What? Those guys are both amazing.
Yeah, they are amazing. So this kind of popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, they announced it, like, oh, we're putting out a comic, and it was out, like, the next day.
Yeah, like, sort of, like, new iPad style or something right. Like that. But, yeah, so they released this digitally on their webpage, which I can't remember.
PanelSyndicate.com.
There you go. And it kind of follows what I would call like the Radiohead model, or what is now like the on Bandcamp a lot of the time. Right. You kind of pay what you want, you know. So you can pay $0 for this, or you could pay $100 for it, or $1 million.
Yeah, right. But they
paid $1 million.
Nick paid $1 million. I paid $100.
I paid zero.
Jared made them give him $1 million. It ends up you can put negatives in, so that's great.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me.
Yeah, but so at that point you have access to either a PDF which you can read on your computer, or a CBR or CBZ which you can use in your program that you use to read all your illegally downloaded comics.
Right. They did say though that 99 cents is fine by them. So if you're not sure, throw in 99 cents.
Yeah.
Did you pay 99 cents?
I paid $2.99.
Nice.
Because this comic is amazing.
It is really good. So
I should have paid more.
You should have paid more.
I will next time.
Yeah. So why don't you tell people why it's so good?
All right. First, this is going to be hopefully a 10-issue series. So if you guys do pay any amount of money, hopefully it'll be enough to keep them going with this. This is a sci-fi comic in the distant future, maybe 100 years out. Everyone, like, privacy laws are so powerful that everyone wears a disguise.
And it's like 50 years in the future.
50 years.
Because there's that guy who was in his 20s who is now very obviously in his 70s or 80s.
Yeah, that's right. So everyone's wearing disguises of some sort, either like mask or costumes or holograms or all a variety of things like that. But the main character is kind of this private eye who specializes in tracking down and getting evidence of what people really look like. Which is highly illegal at this point. So his first client is like, has someone a crush he had on in high school, and is like, I really want to get in touch with this person. Can you find out what they are? Because now nobody knows who the real people are, and you can't find any information on them. So there's
kind of reminded me of Moon Moth in that sense.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, which is a book that we talked about a while ago, but it's basically
an old Jack Vance story that a good comic book came out too.
About people who wear masks and communicate with like these elaborate instruments. But anyway. Sorry.
Wow, crazy. But yeah, so later he gets onto this friend of his who was like this 20-year-old hipster, basically our time, and now 50 years in the future is like still trying to adjust to this completely crazy new world. Because
talking about like not having bars on his phone and the cloud, and people are like, what are you even talking about? Right. What is the internet?
Right, because the thing that they put out is that apparently the cloud is the backstory for this, has broken and released every bit of information that's ever been put online, everyone right. found out. So all your secrets, all your passwords, all your secret messages to each other, all your pictures, yeah. everyone had it.
It started raining, basically.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why they didn't say that in there, but anyway.
And that's why, and I feel like that's kind of part of the reason why everybody's like hiding and wearing masks.
Oh, yeah.
And
stuff.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, basically, it caused everybody to want to be anonymous, whereas like now, everybody's information is just out there.
Right.
And that was kind of a cool idea in the story, I thought.
Yeah, but that's just the background. So yeah, yeah. It's about 32 pages? This was a pretty long one.
Yeah, it's 32. And they're kind of double-sized pages,
yeah,
too.
So they specifically said this will never be printed on paper, which I thought was bizarre. But
it will be, though.
They said no. I hope so. Because the reason they did it is this is specifically formatted for computers and iPads and stuff. So it reads like a widescreen comic, but the sizing is to match a computer screen shape.
Because it doesn't quite fit the iPad even.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it's like it's got like it's a little letterboxed, yeah.
But yeah, so it's like got these huge widespread panels and like Martin movement all over the page and lots of jumping off of buildings, like very I don't know.
Yeah, and Marcus Martin, he did that Spectacular Sundays thing in Spider-Man, which was those big two-page spreads.
Right.
And he's always been really good at doing these kind of crazy,
very dynamic
like Will
stuff.
Eisner-esque yeah. pages yeah. where they work in the titles or do other crazy things. And I mean, he's like at the top of his game.
It's a perfect choice.
Yeah.
So the main plot, once that intro case is set up, is that there's a new mysterious client who wears a tiger head mask who is hiring him to, I don't remember what she's investigating or wanted him to investigate.
To find this person.
To find someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. There's a twist.
Oh, no, sorry. She goes to him because she's applying for a job that does a background check.
And she wants him to check her out and whatever he can possibly find.
Yeah, yeah. Which is like a classic noir thing of like hiring a private eye to see what other people can find out about you.
Right.
Yeah. But,
and she's saying that she's done things that she thinks is covered up, but she wants to make sure that it's not still known. And yeah. And there's a twist and people out to get people. And it's a noir story, but yeah.
Yeah, they like set up a lot of mysteries. There's like a name written on a hand, that kind of thing, you know? Right. Like
With all these disguises or people disguising as each other. So good.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, and you can even see
the cops after him.
In the guy's apartment, like in her apartment in the background, there's like a Maltese Falcon poster and stuff.
Yeah,
like it seems to be very much following in that kind of vein of like Maltese Falcon, The Big Sleep, those kind of movies. But with the setting that we were talking about, and it's great. It's really cool. The art's great. The writing is really good.
Super awesome.
Yeah, it's maybe the third best thing that came out this week.
If you have the internet. You should get it.
You should definitely get it.
When Marcos Martin left Daredevil, a lot of people were like, why did he get off this book? And everyone was like, oh, he's going to go to Image or something. And now we know. And the other thing that was exciting is they said that if this is successful, they'll just keep doing more comics on this webpage, panelsyndicate.com, which I was. Just to deviate horribly, I'm very surprised more people haven't done this. I guess it hasn't really been at that point where there's been a big brand name recognition or something to break off and do your own thing. And Image Comics has kind of been filling that gap for a lot of people in terms of creator ownership and stuff.
Well, the thing with that is like self-releasing things. It's like if you're a Radiohead or you're a Nine Inch Nails or you're a Brian K. Vaughan, it's easy. But if you have just your own comic and you're kind of unknown, it's really hard to get out there and make money off of it.
That's why I'm surprised that more people like Brian K. Vaughan haven't tried this.
Right.
Or maybe they had back in the, 10 years ago or 20 years ago even, and creator-owned movement kind of flamed out.
Haven't you read Reinventing Comics? I mean, microtransactions are the future.
Getting there.
Yeah, but yeah, I think you will see more people do this after this. I'm going to imagine, even though it's pay what you want, I'm going to guess they made a truckload of money pretty fast.
I hope so.
And
so good.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a really good comic, and we would recommend that everybody pick it up.
Yes.
Yep.
All right, so up next, we've got maybe the best thing of the week. There's a ton of good stuff this week.
Yep.
This is Unico or Unico. I don't even know.
Unico.
Unico.
Unicorn.
Unicorn.
Unicorn. This is by Osamu Tezuka, who of course did Astro Boy and other
Message
stuff.
Adolf.
Yeah, why am
Dororo.
I like, I'm like and other stuff.
Buddha.
Yeah, he did Buddha.
Blackjack.
Yeah. He's the greatest comics creator of all time, potentially.
Probably, yeah.
And definitely one of the most prolific. You know, it's like him or Jack Kirby. It's one of those two guys.
Yeah.
But or Karl Barks, maybe. But yeah, so Unico is I'd say one of his more internationally kind of famous works.
There was an animated movie.
Yeah, there was an animated movie.
No idea.
And, you know, like Kimba the White Lion, I feel like it kind of... Not to be confused with Simba, the tan lion. Yeah. It made its way over here. Yeah. And actually, my wife's sister was posting about, like, I posted a picture of this on Facebook, and she was like, remember we used to watch this when we were kids all the time?
What?
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, wow. Unico is basically, there's a setup, and then it kind of breaks into this series of vignettes. So the setup is that Venus...
There's a super cute unicorn.
Yeah, there's a... basically, Venus finds out about this woman named Psyche, who is immortal, or Psyche.
Psyche.
And finds out that people are sort of worshipping Psyche's beauty over top of her beauty. And because...
Oh, that's... Those gods don't like that.
Yeah, they don't like that. And because of that, it's kind of like the idea that as, like, her palace is in disrepair, as people right. stop sort of believing in her and caring about her and stuff like that. So she finds out that Psyche has this pet unicorn, this little baby unicorn called Unico. And, you know, a unicorn will only love somebody who is, like, pure and meek right. and beautiful. So she decides to kidnap the unicorn. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it kind of sets off Unico on this kind of series of finding these different owners and being involved in these different kind of almost like Aesop fable type vignettes yeah. about yeah. like she love like, and
she sends him shooting through space and time basically.
Yeah, yeah. So the first place that Unico goes is kind of well after the initial thing, which is like this funny like pet beauty pageant or whatever right. that has a nice nod to Winsor McKay in it, which is yeah. pretty cool. But Unico goes and like meets up with this Native American boy, and he falls in love with this white girl that lives like in a village. And then the story, yeah. I don't want to give away
like
too much.
This is like Old West times.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of unfolds from there. I don't want to give away too much. Cause it's very like each of the stories has kind of its own twist at the end of it.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. and some of them are pretty insane.
Yeah, they definitely are. And the whole thing has a very Disney feel to it.
Very much.
Tezuka is often like referred to as the, you know, the Disney, right. Walt Disney of Japan.
Right.
And I think that in this, maybe more than anything I've seen, you can really see
yeah.
that.
Yeah. For one thing, this was printed in color, which is pretty amazing. The other thing, this was a Kickstarter project, which is astounding that more of the stuff's coming out like that.
Oh, like the Star Trek pinball table in Pinball Arcade.
But basically, there are 8 chapters in this. This was originally published as 3 different books, but it's all together. It's like 400 pages. And like they said, each one's a huge variety. There's like... Each one is like I can see it perfectly working as a TV show because like Unico will be sent by the magical Western wind to a new place and then have to help some new person. It's like the perfect like sequential like how do you survive this situation? Oh, and Unico every time he arrives he loses all his memory, so he doesn't even know who he is.
Right,
and he has magical powers to do a lot of stuff, but only if someone loves him. So there's a lot right. of just like the pure nature of Unico being helpful and being friendly and helping people out then allows him to help out someone else in return. But there's one where he like helps a cat. There's one where
there's a couple where he's in the future.
Yep. There's one where he helps a princess. Right. There's one where he helps a family of rats. there's one where, a giant a mechanical factory has fallen in love with a girl. There's one where he meets the Sphinx in ancient Greece. There's one where he meets Titania and Oberon from Midsummer Night's Dream.
It's crazy.
It's he goes to Imperial Russia and meets a princess. Oh my god, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. I mean,
400 pages of craziness.
Yeah, and so it's 400 full color pages. And one of the really interesting things about this is the way that it's presented. All the pages are full bleed, mm-hmm. and I guess the way that it was drawn is there's always something coming out of the panels, so it's
right.
like
oh, yeah.
It's kind of hard to explain. We'll put up a picture, but like on the edges of the panels, the pictures continue, and it right. just it gives it a really interesting look that I've never seen, not just in manga, but just I've never seen in any kind of comic
no,
ever.
Definitely,
no, yeah.
And it's awesome. And Tezuka's art is so great. Anyway, it's so dynamic and fluid, and
rarely in color.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah. I mean, especially. Well, not just especially over here. I mean, he would just most of his stuff came out in black and white. Well, so
yeah, very common in Japan.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. It's a little pricey. It's like $35 for a paperback, but yeah, it's like
400 pages
full color,
and these stories are amazing. There's like hilarious bits and pieces in it. A lot of really tender and like just emotional segments, and like each story stands on its own perfectly, but builds a very great overall story of Unico trying to make it. And
it's like owning a box set of Disney movies.
Yeah, 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 it is. It's except way weirder.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Yeah, I think it's the best book that came out this week, probably.
Yeah, it's
probably.
So good.
That Jodel book is great, too. But yeah, anyway, up next, we've got... Oh, our highest recommendation. On
highest.
By the way. Up next, we've got Ultron number one. This is spinning out of the Age of Ultron thing that nobody cares about that's happening right now. This is written by Catherine Immonen and has art by Coleman... Catherine Immonen wrote... Short Moving Pictures, which was a really great graphic novel. Did we talk about that on here?
Maybe.
And the art's by Almacar Pina.
Pina.
But, whoever I had written down here, somebody different.
Currently is writing Journey into Mystery.
Yeah, she's writing Journey into Mystery, and she also wrote Hellcat and some other cool stuff. Right. Yeah.
So this is a standalone. It's a single issue, and it's basically, what's this kid's name?
Victor.
Victor. Thanks. Yeah. So this is a kid who showed up first in the Runaway series, and this reads most like the original Brian K. Vaughan Runaway stuff than anything I've read in a really long time using these characters.
Even more than some of the people that wrote Runaways after Brian K. Vaughan.
That's what I mean.
She wrote Runaways for a while.
Yeah, like right at the very end.
Yeah,
like,
the really good stuff at the end.
Yeah. Nails this so well.
It was funny because some people like... Joss Whedon and Terry Moore couldn't write Runaway stories as good as...
Good, yeah. Victor Mancha, who's basically...
Ultron's son.
Yeah, he's like a cyborg that Ultron made to be his child to also destroy the universe or prepare it for Ultron to destroy it. Which, spoiler alert, Age of Ultron, Ultron is destroying the universe, or Earth anyway. So this is basically him, Victor, surviving in the ruins of the destroyed America, trying to survive and figure out what his crazy robot dad has done.
Yeah.
And running into, like, orphans and
Yeah, I thought one of the best things about this is, besides, like, it being kind of a survival thing, it's also about, like, if you're like, a Runaways fan, it's got this weird sort of slowly revealing, like, what happened to the rest of the Runaways, and it's pretty interesting.
In the Age of Ultron, though, not,
hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before the timeline gets rejiggered or whatever.
Yeah,
we'll see.
But, besides just revealing stuff about Runaways, it feels like Runaways in a very specific way, too, in that it's just, like, this group of kids that are
running away from robots.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is just a one-shot.
Yeah.
Right, but these kind of few characters that are in it, she does a good job of, like, sort of immediately making them interesting, I feel like, which is, it really surprised me. I was like, oh, this Age of Ultron thing, like, I like this character. He was kind of a later addition to Runaways, but was still always an interesting character. But yeah, I was surprised at, like, how attached I got to everybody so fast.
Yeah, and some crazy stuff happens.
Yeah.
It's good.
And the art's good.
Really cool art.
It's very clean. It kind of reminds me of the original Runaways art.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the whole thing just feels like Runaways in a way that nothing has in a long time, and it makes me want to read Runaways comics.
I was just thinking, like, I got to reread Runaways.
On a side note, did you guys see that Adrian Alfona is drawing Uncanny X-Force?
Oh, really? Well, that's cool.
She did part of this issue.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's pretty nuts.
Yeah. But this was good. If you're in the Age of Ultron, which I'm guessing you're not, it's worth checking out. But even if you're not into it, which I'm guessing is what is really happening, and you're a Runaways fan, definitely check this out.
Yeah, definitely.
Because nobody likes Age of Ultron.
I do.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
What?
It's like,
for the most part,
it's like the best dumb Marvel front ever.
It's definitely one of those words you said. Up next, we've got Batman Little Gotham number one. This is by Dustin Nguyen and Derek Friedhoffs. I don't know how that breaks down. Nguyen definitely drew it.
He writes and draws it, and the other guy
does like the finishes, like the coloring and stuff.
He just tells him, great job.
Co-written by that Friedhoffs kid.
There you go. And there's not a ton to say about this. This was kind of published online.
Yeah.
It's very...
it's three short stories.
Yeah.
It's Dustin Nguyen drawing little versions of Gotham characters.
In a very sort of Jill Thompson
situations.
Style.
Yeah.
Also his style, too, though. But, yeah, it's just like...
There's a hilarious story
in
this.
The super shrunken chibi style.
Yeah, Japanese SD, stuff. Super deformed.
There you go, super deformed.
So this is two stories, one at Halloween and one at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's just, like, goofy.
The Thanksgiving one cracked me up so much. It's, like, about, the Penguin is tired of everybody killing all these turkeys, so he takes over the Thanksgiving Day parade with an army of turkeys, And the way that they like take care of that is so hilarious.
And it's also Halloween Batman, and it's taking Damien out for his first time trick-or-treating, and he just assumes everyone in costume is a bad thing, is really a bad guy. He just starts beating up all these kids, and then he's like trying to explain how to get candy, and he's just like, I could just steal all this candy.
It's just funny.
It plays very well.
Yeah, it's funny. It's fun. It was, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's just...
It's like utterly inconsequential, but like wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. And I think it's going to be a few issues.
Cool.
And yeah, no, it was just cute and a lot of fun. And I would recommend it to anyone with kids, because I feel like
there's not that many.
Sorely lacking right now. No. Superman Family Adventures is over. A couple of the other series have been canceled. It kind of sucks. But all right, we just got one more book this week. This is Polarity Number 1. This is written by Max Bemis, who is the lead singer of the band Say Anything. and the art in this is no, but this is actually well written. I'm just gonna go.
That's
say
what's
that.
Gonna throw yeah, our whole review. Yeah.
It's like, remember when Gerard Way wrote Umbrella Academy?
Yeah,
and I was like, wait, what? The guy from My Chemical Romance. But and the art in this is by Jorge Coelho, who I don't really know his stuff, but
I know the name.
But I thought it was pretty solid art.
Yeah, the art remind me a lot of Tony Moore a little bit.
I can see that. Yeah. Sure,
can,
yeah.
And a little Times of Brahma
and maybe a little Tradmore as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely yeah. a little Tradmore in the action segments.
Yeah.
And the way that everybody's really long.
Yeah. And there's definitely a little Luther Strode tucked into this book as well.
Right. So basically the premise of this is that there's this guy who's bipolar. And there's a really funny artist. Way you're introduced to the fact that he's bipolar, because he's like walking around and everybody's giving him nasty looks, and you find out that he's like not wearing pants. But yeah, it's about him and his like... He's got this girlfriend who's like a hipster, and she's all in art, and he's like just with her just because he's like not sure what to do with his life because he's bipolar.
Yeah, well, basically he had a meltdown.
Right.
And he was an artist before that, but sort of during his meltdown, he produced a bunch of art that became very popular.
Right.
And now made him very famous. So he has this hipster girlfriend because basically she's like
she liked what he did when he was losing it.
Yeah. I almost swore. So we were... She's just glommed on. She's a sycophant, basically.
Right, yeah.
And but now he's kind of on his meds, and his art isn't as popular
anymore.
He's
kind of numb to everything and just doesn't really want to do anything.
And so she's dumping him, basically. But there's this other girl that he's kind of in love with anyway.
Yeah.
And then
he goes off his meds and crazy things start happening.
Yeah. And
really crazy.
And so it's kind of the idea that like he goes off his meds so he can produce better art again. And then...
But it basically becomes like a paranoid...
Yeah, like a paranoid person. Schizophrenic, yeah. Basically. But then kind of... A little bit of the twist. I don't want to give too much away, but like it's kind of like, well, maybe that paranoia isn't all fake.
Right. Yeah. So and it's kind of the twist ending, like how crazy is he versus what's really going on.
And then there's another twist ending, like a big twist ending, which I'm not going to give away anything about. But that's where a little bit of the Luther Strode element comes into it. But yeah, I actually thought that this was really good. I mean, considering that this guy's in a garbage band.
Trash and Say Anything.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. I don't really know a lot about Say Anything. Is that the song that plays when John Cusack is holding up the boombox?
Yeah, that's
the whole movie's about the band.
Oh, the whole movie's about the band.
Yeah.
Joan Cusack is in the band. And then Max Bemis the name of his character in that movie?
Sean Cusack.
Oh, it's Sean Cusack. So it's Sean Cusack, Juan Cusack, John Cusack, and Joan Cusack?
Yeah.
Okay, and Joanne Cusack.
Yeah, this is basically, it's also written as a sequel to Gross Point Blank.
Yeah, it's written by a sack of Cusacks. To be honest, I was really surprised.
Yeah, well, the thing that he has a little letter column at the back, and the thing that I was like, oh, he says the plot is basically an extremely exaggerated version of what I went through as a young musician finding success. Ugh.
That makes me like it less.
While having my first manic episodes and coping with being bipolar, and I'm like, aha.
Yeah.
So
and that's the hook. That's why you should like my band.
You get the feeling through this that he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. That's true. I just realized there's a download code for the new song Polarity by Max Bemis.
Oh boy.
So get your new comic real quick, kids.
Get that. Get your Angels and Airwaves albums and get out of my face.
I don't know how many people that love Say Anything out there.
I don't I don't know if I've ever even heard say anything. I'm pretty sure I have, but whatever.
We should listen to it right after this.
Let's close out the show with the song "Polarity" by Say Anything. I mean, we just reviewed the
by
comic,
Max Bemis.
Right? Yeah, by Max Bemis. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see you guys next time. And here's the new track from Max Bemis.
In your eyes, the light, the heat. Resolution of all the fruitless soldiers.